occasional tapping of wind against the window pane. No car horns honking, no neighbors screaming at one another, no bottles breaking on the sidewalks. In a bed like this, with heaping blankets and a down comforter, a girl felt safe. She glanced over at the clock. It was 6. Still dark outside. In these first weeks of winter, the days were short. If she'd been going to Fircrest on this Monday morning, she would have needed to wear her woolen tights with the uniform. Not that it mattered anymore. Today would be her first day at West End High. A pregnant transfer student who would only be around until the end of the semester. The popular girls were sure to love her. She threw the covers back and got out of bed. Gathering her stuff together, she went into the bathroom and took a quick shower, then carefully dried her hair until it lay straight. Back in the bedroom, she searched her drawers for something to wear. Nothing seemed right for the first day of a new school. Finally, she settled on a pair of flare-legged, low-rise jeans with a fringed suede belt and a white sweater. As she was putting the sweater on, one of her hoop earrings popped free and skittered across the floor. David had given her those earrings for her last birthday. She dropped to the floor and started looking, spreading her hands across the boards. There it was, under the bed. She scooted under the bed and found the earring, and something else. Tucked way in the back was a long, narrow wooden box. It looked so much like the floorboards, you'd have to be this close to see it. Lauren grabbed the box and dragged it out from underneath the bed. Opening it, she found a heap of old black-and-white family photographs. Most of them featured 3 little girls in pretty dresses gathered around a dark, well-dressed man with a smile that lit up his whole face. He was tall and almost elegantly thin, with eyes that closed into slits when he laughed. And he was laughing in most of the pictures. He reminded Lauren of that actor from the old days, the one that always fell in love with Grace Kelly. Mr. Desaria. Absurdly, Lauren thought of him as Papa. She looked through the pictures, saw the images of a childhood she dreamed of. Family road trips to the Grand Canyon and Disneyland, days spent at the Grays County Fair, eating cotton candy and riding the roller coaster. Evenings at this very cottage, roasting marshmallows at a bonfire near the water's edge. A knock pounded at the door.
It's 6:30, Lauren. Rise and shine.
I'm up.
She pushed the box back under the bed, then made her bed and picked up her room. When she left it and closed the door behind her, there was no visible evidence that she'd even been there. Downstairs, she found Angie in the kitchen.
Good morning, Angie said, scooping scrambled eggs from a frying pan to a plate. You're just in time.
You made me breakfast? Was that okay? Do you mind?
Are you kidding? It's great!
Angie smiled again. Good. You'll need to eat well in the next few months. They stared at each other in a sudden, awkward silence. The distant hum of the ocean seemed to grow louder. Lauren couldn't help touching her stomach. Angie winced. Maybe I shouldn't have said that.
I'm pregnant. There's no point pretending I'm not.
No. Lauren couldn't think of anything else to say. She went to the table and sat down, scooting in close.
Breakfast smells great.
Angie handed her a plate with a couple of scrambled eggs, 2 pieces of cinnamon toast, and some cantaloupe slices on it. That's about the only thing I can cook.
Thank you, Lauren said softly, looking up.
Angie sat down across from her.
You're welcome.
Finally, she smiled.
So, how did you sleep?
Good. I'll have to get used to the quiet.
Yeah, when I moved to Seattle, it took me forever to get used to the noise.
Do you miss the city? Angie looked surprised by the question, as if maybe she hadn't thought of it before.
I don't, actually. I've been sleeping amazingly well lately.
That must mean something.
It's the sea air.
Excuse me?
Your mama told me that if a girl grows up smelling sea air, She can never really breathe inland.
Angie laughed. That sounds like my mother. But Seattle is hardly inland. Your mother thinks everything except West End is inland.
They talked a bit more about this and that. Then Angie stood up.
You do the dishes. I'll shower and meet you in 10 minutes, then we'll go to school.
What do you mean?
I'm driving you, of course. The restaurant doesn't open till 11:30. Carpool is no problem. Hey, by the way, I thought Furcrest had a uniform.
They do.
Why are you in civilian clothes?
Lauren felt the heat on her cheeks. They took back my scholarship. Uniforms don't come in elephant sizes, I guess.
Are you telling me they kicked you out of school because you're pregnant?
It's no big deal.
She hoped her voice didn't betray how she really felt.
The hell you say?
I don't know. Do the dishes, Lauren, and put on your uniform. We're paying Furcrest Academy a little visit.
An hour later, they were in the counselor's office. Lauren stood with her back to the wall, trying to disappear into the rough white stucco.
Angie sat in a chair, facing Mrs. Detlis, who was behind her desk with her hands clasped together on the metal surface.
"It's a pleasure to finally meet you, Mrs. Ribideau," Mrs. Detlis said. "I guess there has been some miscommunication about Lauren's future here at Furcrest."
Lauren drew in a sharp breath and looked at Angie, who smiled.
"I'm here to discuss my daughter's future," Angie said, crossing one leg over the other.
"I see. Well, you'll need to discuss that with the counselor at West End. You see,
what I see," Angie said evenly, "is a lawsuit.
Or perhaps a headline. Catholic school expels poor, perfect student for being pregnant. I know about headlines because my ex-husband is a reporter for the Seattle Times. You know, he was saying just the other night that the big city papers could use a good small-town scandal."
We didn't technically expel Lauren. I merely suggested that girls could be cruel to a girl in her kind of trouble.
She frowned. "I didn't know about your husband." She started looking through Lauren's file. Angie looked at Lauren.
"You worried about the girls being mean to you?"
Lauren shook her head. If she had a voice, she couldn't find it. Angie turned back to the counselor.
"It was kind of you to think of Lauren's feelings on this, but as you can see, she's a tough kid."
Mrs. Detlis slowly closed Lauren's folder. Then she said,
"I suppose she could finish the semester here and take the finals. There's only 6 weeks left in the term, and Christmas break cuts in the middle of it. She could take her finals in January and graduate early, but I really believe..."
Angie stood up. "Thank you, Mrs. Detlis. Lauren will graduate from Furcrest, which is as it should be."
"You're welcome," Mrs. Detlis said,
obviously irritated. "I'm sure you'll make every effort to help her. And I'll be sure and tell my uncle how well it all turned out for Lauren."
"Your uncle? Oh, did I forget to mention that?"
She looked right at the counselor. "Cardinal Lanza is my mother's brother." Mrs. Detlis seemed to shrink into her chair.
"Oh,"
was how she answered, but it could hardly be heard at all.
"Let's go, Lauren," Angie said, heading for the door.
Lauren stumbled along beside her.
"That was amazing," she said when they got outside.
"And fun. The old bat needed a wake-up call."
"How did you know what to say?"
"Life, honey. It all comes in handy."
Lauren smiled. She felt great. Better than great. No one had ever fought for her like that, and the effort strengthened her, made her feel invincible. With Angie on her side, she could do anything, even attend classes when she knew people would be staring and talking.
Angie grinned. "I just hope there is a Cardinal Lanza."
At that, they both burst into laughter.
Angie stood at the corner, watching Lauren walk across campus. She held herself back from shouting, "Bye, honey. Have a good day at school. I'll be here at 6 to pick you up." She was still young enough to know that such a scene would be the height of uncool.
and poor Lauren didn't need any extra attention to come her way. Pregnant in private school was enough. A geek wannabe mother might push her over the edge. Lauren paused at the big building's double door. Turning slightly, she waved at Angie, then disappeared inside. Angie's chest felt tight. "You little witches better be nice to my girl," she said. Closing her eyes, she said a prayer for Lauren. Then she got into the car. As she was driving home, trying not to imagine the firestorm of gossip at Fircrest Academy, she considered going back, parking by the flagpole just in case. What if Lauren came out crying, broken by the kinds of petty cruelty that only teenage girls could inflict? She would need Angie. "No," she said aloud, taking charge of her negative fantasies. Lauren had to get through this day on her own. There was no other way. The road she'd found herself on was dark and scary. There was no way out except through. The bleeding ring of her cell phone saved her. She dug into her purse and found it, answering on the third ring. "Angie?" She hadn't realized until just then, when she drew in a sharp breath, that she'd been waiting for this. "Hey, Con," she said, trying to sound casual. To be safe, she pulled off to the side of the road. Her heart was going a mile a minute. "I've been thinking about the other night."
"Me too," she thought.
"We need to talk."
"That's been true for years," she said. "Do you want to come down to the cottage?"
The minute the invitation slipped out, she thought, Lauren. He would not be happy about the situation.
"Not today. I'm busy," he said. "Maybe..."
His voice trailed into the dark woods of uncertainty. He was reconsidering. She could tell. "It's Monday. The restaurant's closed. I could come up and buy you lunch."
"Lunch?"
"It's a meal, often characterized by sandwiches and soups." Her joke fell flat. "Come on, Con. You need to eat lunch."
"How about Al Boccolino?"
"I can be there by 11:30. She flicked her turn signal and eased back onto the road.
"See you then."
"Bye," he said.
"Bye."
Angie wanted to smile, but all she could think about was the girl living under her roof. Conlon would not take this news well. She made it to downtown Seattle in record time, parked the car, and headed for the restaurant. Their restaurant. At least it had been once. She was four blocks away when it started to pour. Raindrops the size of golf balls battered the sidewalk in front of her, formed rushing silver rivers along the curb. She popped open her umbrella and headed for Pioneer Square. In the park, dozens of homeless people huddled in pods, passing cigarettes back and forth, trying to keep dry. Finally, she reached Yesler. The viaduct, that arching concrete overpass that dared a big earthquake to crumble it, held the rain at bay. She ducked into the restaurant. Al Boccolino was empty this early in the day. The working lunch crowd wouldn't be here for another hour at least. Carlos, the owner of the restaurant, came around the corner. Seeing her, he smiled.
"Mrs. Malone, it's good to see you again."
"You too." She handed him her coat and umbrella and followed him into the small, Tuscan-inspired trattoria. Immediately, she smelled the pungent combination of garlic and thyme that reminded her of home.
"You should bring your mama back sometime," Carlos said with a smile.
Angie laughed. The one time she had brought her parents here, Mama had spent the whole night in the kitchen chastising the chef for cutting tomatoes for marinara.
"Crush them," she'd muttered. "That is why God gave us hands."
"Sure, Carlos," she said, her smile fading when she saw Conlon. He rose at her appearance. Carlos helped her into her seat, gave them each a menu, and then disappeared.
"It feels strange to be here again," Angie said.
"I know. I haven't been here since our anniversary." She frowned.
"I thought your apartment was right around the corner."
It is.
The silence descended again. They looked at each other. Carlos appeared at the table, holding a bottle of champagne.
My favorite couple together again. It's good.
He filled each fluted glass with glittering, bubbling liquid. He looked at Conlon.
You let me decide your lunch menu, yes?
Of course, Conlon answered, still looking at Angie. She felt exposed by that look, vulnerable. She reached for her glass, kneading something in her hand. I want to tell you about this girl I met, she thought. Conlon, she said just as Carlos reappeared by the table, holding a plate of caprese salad. By the time they'd oohed and aahed over the food, Angie had lost her nerve. She finished her glass of champagne and poured a second. She's really great. She's living with me. Oh, and did I mention she's pregnant? She added to herself. Conlon leaned forward, put his elbows on the table. This morning, I got a call from my agent. I've been offered a book contract. He paused, then said, and the only person I wanted to tell was you. What do you think that means? She knew how much it had cost him to admit that. She wanted to reach for him, take his hand in hers and tell him that she still loved him, that she'd always loved him and always would, but it was too soon for that. Instead, she said, I think it means we loved each other for a long time.
Most of my life.
She took her glass and toasted his. The brittle clinking was the sound of beginnings. She knew she should tell him about Lauren now, but she couldn't do it. This moment felt magical somehow, full of possibility. Tell me everything. He launched into the story of a local man who had been convicted of raping and killing several elderly women in the late 90s. Conlon had done an investigative piece on the story and been hooked. He'd come to believe the man was innocent, and DNA had just proven it.
It's a Cinderella deal, he said. They're giving me a decent amount of money to write this book and another one.
He was still talking about the story an hour later when they finished their dessert and paid the bill. Angie got to her feet, noticing that she was more than a little tipsy. Conlon stood beside her, steadied her with his touch. She stared up at him. His face, creased now in a smile, made her want to cry. I'm so proud of you, Conlon. His smile faded.
This can't be good.
What can't? He pulled her into his arms and kissed her, right there in the restaurant, in front of everyone. It wasn't one of those, you could be my grandma kisses either. Oh, no.
Wow, she said when it was over.
She realized she was swaying slightly. She tried to remain still. It was difficult. Her heart was pounding. She wanted him with a ferocity that surprised her.
But we need to talk, she said, trying to think straight. Later, he said in a gravelly, desperate voice. Taking her hand, he pulled her toward the door. We're going to my place.
She gave in. It was impossible not to. Can we run?
Definitely.
Outside, Angie was surprised to see that it was still light. Then she remembered it had been a lunch date. They ran through the rain down Yesler Street, turned on Jackson. Conlon jammed his key in the lock. Angie pressed up against his back and put her arms around him. She moved her hands down to his waistband.
Damn,
he muttered, trying another key. The lock clicked open. He pushed through the door and dragged her toward the elevator. When the doors opened, they tumbled inside, still kissing. Angie was on fire. She touched him everywhere, kissed him until she felt dizzy. She couldn't breathe. The doors opened. He swept her into his arms and carried her down the hall. In minutes, seconds, they were in his bedroom. Conlon placed her gently on the bed. She lay there, feeling dazed with the kind of desire she'd forgotten about.
Take off your clothes, she said in a husky voice, propping herself onto her elbows.
He knelt at the foot of the bed between her legs.
I can't stay away from you, he whispered.
There was both wonder and disappointment in his voice. She knew there would be a price for this moment. Right now, she didn't care.
Chapter 25. Naked, Angie stood at the window of her husband's, ex-husband's, apartment, staring out at Elliott Bay. Rain gave the world a blurry, distant countenance. Cars rumbled north and south on the viaduct. The window panes rattled ever so softly from all that traffic, making a sound like the chattering of teeth. If this were a movie moment, she'd be smoking a cigarette and frowning while the montage images from their failed marriage and newborn reconciliation flashed across the screen. The last image, as the movie returned to the present, would be Lauren's face.
You look worried, Conlon said. How well he knew her. Even in profile, with her back slanted toward him, he could tell.
Probably it was in her stance. He always said she tilted her chin up and crossed her arms when she was upset. She didn't turn to face him. In the window, a ghostly image of her face, blurred by rain, gazed back at her.
I wouldn't say worried. Thoughtful, maybe.
The bed springs creaked. He must be sitting up. Ange? Finally, she turned and went to the bed. She sat down beside him. He touched her arm, kissed the swell of her breast.
What is it?
I need to tell you something, she said.
He drew back. That doesn't sound good.
There's this girl.
Oh?
She's a good girl. Perfect grades. Hardworking.
And she's relevant to us? How?
I hired her back in September. She works at the restaurant about 20 hours a week. You know, after school, weekends. Mama hates to admit it, but she's the best waitress they've ever had. Conlon eyed her.
What's her tragic flaw?
There isn't one.
Angie Malone, I know you. Now what the hell are we really talking about here? And don't tell me it's a girl who was a great waitress.
Her mother abandoned her.
Abandoned?
Just walked out one day.
His gaze was steady. Tell me you found her a place to live.
Gave her a place.
Conlon blew out a heavy breath. She's living with you at the cottage?
Yes.
Disappointment stamped itself on his face, in his blue eyes, in his frowning mouth. So you have a teenager living in the house?
It's not like that. Not like before, anyway. I'm just helping her out until...
Until what?
Angie sighed and covered her eyes with her hand.
Until the baby is born.
Oh, shit,
Conlon said, throwing the covers back, getting out of bed.
Con,
he stormed into the bathroom, slammed the door shut behind him. Angie felt as if she'd been kicked in the gut. She'd known this would happen, but what choice did she have? With a sigh, she bent down for her clothes and got dressed. Then she sat on the bed, waiting. He finally came out, wearing a pair of worn old Levi's and a pale blue t-shirt. His anger seemed to have gone. Without it, he looked tired. His shoulders were rounded in defeat. You said you'd changed.
I have.
The old Angie brought a pregnant teenager home, too.
He looked at her.
That was the beginning of the end for us. I remember, even if you don't.
Come on, she said, feeling as if something inside her were breaking. She moved toward him. I've hardly forgotten. Just give me a chance.
I've given you a lifetime of chances, Ange.
He looked around the room, then at the bed.
This was a mistake. I should have known better.
It's different this time. I swear.
She reached for him. He sidestepped out of her grasp. How? How is it different?
She's a 17-year-old with no one to take care of her and nowhere to go. I'm helping her, but I'm not crazy anymore with what I don't have. I've made peace with not having a baby.
Please, she whispered. Give me a chance to show you that this is different. Come meet her.
Meet her? After what Sarah Decker put us through,
this is not Sarah. The baby is Lauren's. Just come and meet her, please, for me.
He looked down at her, long and hard. Then he said, I won't live through it all again. The highs, the lows, the obsessions.
Conlon, believe me, I...
Don't you dare finish that sentence. He reached for his keys off the dresser and headed for the door.
I'm sorry.
He paused. Without looking back, he said, You're always sorry, aren't you, Ange? That's what I should have remembered. In her world history class last year, Lauren had done a report on Victorian London. One of her research sources had been the film The Elephant Man. She remembered sitting in the library after hours, staring at the small television screen, watching the well-heeled Londoners taunt and ridicule poor John Merrick, whose face and body had been twisted and tortured far beyond what a man should have to endure. But the whispers and stares hurt him as deeply as any of his deformities. Lauren understood that now, how much it hurt to be the object of gossip. In all her years at Firkrest, she'd strived for the kind of perfection that draws only positive attention. She was never late to class, never broke the rules, never said mean things about other kids. She'd tried, in all ways, to be like Caesar's wife, above reproach. She should have known how far the mighty fall and how hard the ground could be. Everyone was staring at her, pointing and whispering. Even the teachers seemed shocked and unnerved by her presence. They acted as if she carried a lethal virus, one that could all too easily go airborne and infect innocent passers-by. After school, she let herself be swept along by the laughing, yelling crowd. Even in the midst of all these people, friends mostly, she felt infinitely different, separate. Head down, she tried to be invisible.
Lauren!
She looked up instinctively, though she immediately wished she hadn't. The gang was gathered around the flagpole. Susan and Kim were seated on the bricked ledge beside it. David and Jared were playing hacky sack. She steeled herself for the inevitable. She'd avoided them at lunch by hiding out in the library, but now she had no choice but to say hi. Hey, guys, she said, coming up to the group. She hesitated, saw David do the same. They stared at each other from a distance. The girls swarmed her, pulled at her arm. She followed them out behind the school to their place on the football field. The boys followed along behind, keeping the hacky sack in motion.
Well,
Kim asked when they were all sitting around the goalposts,
how does it feel?
Scary, Lauren answered. She so didn't want to talk about this, but it was better to be talked to than talked about, and these were her best friends.
What are you going to do?
Susan asked, scouting through her backpack for something. Finally, she pulled out a Coke. Opening it, she took a drink and passed it around. David came up behind Lauren, slipped an arm around her waist.
We don't know.
How come you didn't have an abortion? Kim asked, frowning. That's what my cousin did.
Lauren shrugged. I just couldn't. She was starting to wish she were far, far away from here, with Angie, where she felt safe.
David says you're giving it up for adoption. That's cool. My Aunt Sylvia adopted a baby last year.
She's way happy now, Susan said, reaching for the Coke. Lauren looked up at David. For the first time, she realized that he could walk away from this. Leave it in the past, along with all his high school memories. Someday, it would be as forgotten as his 10th grade MVP trophy or his grade point.
Why hadn't she seen that before?
She'd thought they were in this together, but suddenly all the warnings came back to her. It was the girl who got pregnant.
Come with me,
she whispered to him, pulling him aside. He followed her to a dark, quiet place beside the bleachers. She wanted desperately to be held and kissed and reassured, but he just stood there, staring down at her, his confusion as obvious as his love.
What?
I just... I'll miss you over the break. She wished he'd invited her along, but it was a family vacation. My dad set up a meeting in January. With a lawyer. He flinched, looked at her throat. About adoption. Just give it away, she said, hearing the bitterness in her voice. That would be so easy for him. We should at least listen. David looked ready to cry, right there on the football field, with his friends only a few yards away. And she knew none of this was easy on him. Yeah, she said, sure. We should listen. He looked at her. She felt distant from him, older.
Maybe I'll get you a ring. Aspen has tons of cool jewelry stores.
Her heart did a little flip. Really? I love you, he said softly. The words sounded different than before, as if he'd murmured them from far away or mouthed them underwater. By the time she got home, she couldn't remember the sound of those words at all. Angie read the instructions for making ricotta gnocchi for at least the fourth time. She did not consider herself a stupid woman, but she couldn't figure out how the hell she was supposed to use the tines of a fork to form the gnocchis. Forget it. She rolled the dough into a rope and cut it in small pieces. She decided to learn to cook. That didn't mean she wanted to make it her life's work. Good enough. She then stirred the sauce. The pungent aroma of sizzling garlic and onion and simmering tomatoes filled the cottage. Not as good as Mama's, of course. You couldn't get that homemade aroma from a store-bought sauce. She only hoped that none of her family stopped by. At least she was cooking. It was supposed to be therapeutic. That was what her sisters always said. Angie had been desperate enough to give it a try, but now she knew. All that mixing and chopping and scraping hadn't helped at all. I won't live through it all again. The highs, the lows, the obsessions. Maybe she shouldn't have told Conlon about Lauren. Not yet, anyway. Maybe she should have let their love take hold first. No. That would have been like the old days, with her in a lonely wilderness that bordered his but didn't cross over. Though he didn't see the nuances of her change, she did. Honesty had been her only choice. Once or twice today, she'd meandered down the road of regret, almost wishing she hadn't invited Lauren home with her. But in truth, she couldn't really go there. She was glad to be helping the girl. She washed a bunch of fresh basil leaves and began to chop them. They stuck to the knife and formed a green glob. She cut what was left into slices with her scissors. The front door opened. Lauren walked into the house. She was soaking wet. Angie glanced at the clock. You're early. I was supposed to pick you up. I thought I'd save you the trouble. Lauren peeled out of her hooded raincoat and hung it up on the iron coat rack. Then she kicked off her shoes. They thunked against the wall. Put your shoes away neatly, please, Angie said automatically, channeling her mother. At the realization, she laughed. What's funny? I am. I sounded just like my mother for a second there. She tossed the basil in the sauce, stirred it once with a wooden spoon, and covered the pot. So, she said, setting the spoon down, I thought you were going to stay after school with David. Lauren looked miserable. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. Go put on some dry clothes, and we'll have some hot cocoa and talk.
You're busy.
I'm cooking, which probably means we'll have to go out for dinner, so you might as well get dressed. At last, a smile.
Okay.
Angie turned the heat on the stove to low, then made a pot of homemade hot cocoa. It was one of the few things she made well. By the time she was finished and had taken a seat in the living room, Lauren was coming down the stairs.
Thanks, Lauren said, taking a cup of cocoa, sitting in the big leather chair by the window.
I take it your day didn't go well, Angie said, trying to keep her voice gentle. Lauren shrugged. I feel older than all my friends. I guess I can see that. They're worrying about Civil War battle dates, and I'm worrying about how to pay for daycare when I go to college. Not a lot in common there. She looked up. David said he might buy me a ring.
Is that a proposal?
It was exactly the wrong thing to say. Poor Lauren's face crumbled. I didn't think so.
Oh, honey, don't be too hard on him. Grown men can't handle impending fatherhood. David probably feels like he's been dropped out of an airplane and the ground is rushing up to meet him. He knows he's going to hit hard. Just because he's scared doesn't mean he loves you less.
I don't know if I could take that. Him not loving me, I mean.
I know what you mean.
Lauren looked up sharply. She wiped her eyes and sniffed. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have brought it up. I don't want you to be sad, too.
What do you mean?
You still love your ex. I can tell by the way you talk about him.
I'm that obvious, huh?
She looked down at her hands, then said slowly, I saw him today.
She didn't know what made her share that secret. The need to talk about it, maybe.
Really? Is he still in love with you, too?
Angie could hear the hope in Lauren's voice, and she understood the girl's need to believe that a burned-out love could be rekindled. What woman didn't want to believe that?
I don't know. There's a lot of water under our bridge. He wouldn't like me living here.
The perceptiveness of that observation surprised Angie. Why do you say that?
Come on! After what that other pregnant girl did to you guys?
That was different, Angie said, echoing what she'd said to Conlon only a few hours ago, wanting to believe it. I cared about Sarah, sure, but I fell in love with the baby in her womb. I would have adopted that child and brought him into our lives and said goodbye to Sarah. She would have disappeared from our everyday lives. You're different.
How?
I care about you, Lauren. You. She sighed. And yes, sometimes the old needs get away from me. Sometimes I lie in my bed upstairs and close my eyes and pretend you're my daughter. But that doesn't make me who I was, and it doesn't hurt anymore. I have to make Conlon see that.
Angie looked up. She realized that she wasn't even talking to Lauren anymore. She was talking to herself. Lauren was staring at her. Sometimes I pretend you're my mom.
Oh. The word was almost lost in the exhalation of breath that came with it.
I wish you were.
Angie wanted to cry at that. They were both missing the same piece of themselves, she and Lauren. No wonder they'd come together so easily.
We're a team, she said softly. You and me. Somehow God knew we needed each other.
She forced a smile and wiped her eyes. Now, enough doom and gloom. I'm going to try and boil this damn gnocchi. Why don't you set the table?
Lauren lay on her bed, looking at photographs. There were dozens spread out in front of her. Mr. and Mrs. Tesaria, each of the three girls, together, separately, and in every combination. Pictures taken in spring, summer, winter, and fall. At the beach, in the mountains, even a few by the side of the road. She looked at these beautiful pictures and imagined how it would have felt being loved like that for the whole of her life. To have a father come up to her, smiling, and reach for her hand.
Come with me, he'd say. Today we'll... There was a knock at the door. Lauren jackknifed off the bed. She didn't want to get caught pawing through the family's private photographs. She opened the door just enough to see out.
Angie's left eye stared at her through the crack. We're leaving in 10 minutes.
I know. Have a good time.
Lauren closed the door, listening for footsteps. Another knock. She opened the door.
What did you mean by that? Angie asked.
By what?
You said, have a good time.
Yeah, downtown.
It's Christmas Eve.
I know, that's why you're going downtown. You told me all about it last night. You said the Desarias descend on town like locusts, eating everything in their path, so have fun.
I see.
And you're not a Desaria?
Lauren didn't understand. No, I'm not.
So you assumed I'd leave you here alone on Christmas Eve and run off with my real family to gorge on cookies and hot mulled wine.
Lauren blushed.
Well, when you put it that way, get dressed. Is that clear enough for you?
Lauren felt the smile expand across her face.
Yes, ma'am. Dress warmly. They're predicting a white Christmas, and please remember that I'm much too young to be a ma'am.
Lauren closed the door and ran to the bed. She scooped up all the photographs, except for the few she'd chosen, and dumped them back in the box, which she shoved under the bed. Then she gathered up her two disposable cameras and hid them in the nightstand drawer. Once all the evidence was taken care of, she dressed in her old flare-leg Target jeans, a black wool turtleneck sweater, and her fur-trimmed coat. Downstairs, Angie was waiting. She looked beautiful in a forest green wool dress with black boots and black cape. Her long dark hair was the very best kind of mess. It made her look hip.
You look great, Lauren said.
You too. Now come on. They went out to the car and got in. All the way to town, they chatted. Not about anything important, just ordinary life. By the time they reached Front Street, the traffic was bumper to bumper.
I can't believe all these people are out on Christmas Eve, Lauren said.
It's the final tree lighting ceremony.
Oh, Lauren said, not quite understanding what all the hype was about.
She'd lived in this town for years and never been to one of these ceremonies. She'd always had to work on weekends and holidays. David had told her it was okay, but he hadn't been in years either. Too many people was his parents' excuse. Angie found a parking spot and pulled in. The minute she got out of the car, Lauren heard the first sound of Christmas. Bells. Every church in town was pealing its bells. Somewhere nearby, a horse-drawn carriage was moving along. She could hear the clip-clop of the hooves and the jangling of harness bells. In the town square, dozens, maybe hundreds of tourists were milling about, moving from one store to the next, collecting in front of the booths that sold everything from hot cocoa to rum cake to candy canes. The Rotary Club was roasting chestnuts by the flagpole.
Angela!
Maria's voice rang out above the crowd. The next thing Lauren knew, she was swept into the Desaria family. Everyone was talking at once, telling jokes, holding hands. They moved from booth to booth, eating every morsel that was offered and buying bags of whatever they couldn't eat on the spot. Lauren saw dozens of school friends moving through the crowd with their families. For once, she felt as if she were a part of things instead of on the outside looking in. She stayed close to Angie.
It's time, Mira said at last.
As if on cue, the family stopped. In fact, the whole town seemed to freeze. The lights went out. Darkness clicked into place. Suddenly, the stars overhead were stunning. An air of anticipation moved through the crowd. Angie took Lauren's hand in hers, squeezed it gently. The Christmas lights came on. Hundreds of thousands of them, all at once. Lauren gasped. Magic.
Pretty cool, huh? Angie said, putting an arm around Lauren.
Yeah. Lauren's throat felt tight. They spent another hour in the square and then walked to church for midnight mass, which in this day and age took place at 10. After the service, the Desarias split up, each going their separate ways. Angie and Lauren walked through the crowd, pointing out things to each other along the way. By the time they reached the car, it had started to snow. They drove home slowly. The flakes were huge and airy. They fell lazily to earth. Lauren couldn't remember the last time she'd seen a white Christmas. Rain was much more the holiday norm. On Miracle Mile Road, the snow was sticking. It coated the tree limbs and dusted the roadside. The yard lay hidden beneath a blanket of sparkling white.
I wonder if we'll be able to go sledding tomorrow, she said, bouncing up and down in her seat.
She knew she was acting like a little kid, but she couldn't help it.
Or maybe we could make snow angels. I saw that on television once. Hey, who's that?
he was standing at the front door of Angie's house in a wedge of golden light. A veil of falling snow obscured his face. The car stopped. Lauren peered through the windshield. He stepped down from the porch, came closer. And suddenly, Lauren knew. The man in the worn Levi's and black leather jacket was Conlon. She turned to Angie, whose eyes looked huge in her pale face. "Is that him?" Angie nodded. "That's my Conlon." "Wow," was all Lauren could say. He looked like Pierce Brosnan. She got out of the car. He came toward her, his shoes crunching on the gravel driveway. "You must be Lauren." His voice was low and rumbly, as if maybe he'd smoked or drank too much when he was young. When he looked at her, she had to fight the urge to flinch. He had the bluest eyes she'd ever seen, and they seemed to penetrate her to the bone. He seemed angry with her. "I am." "Conlon," Angie said breathlessly, coming up beside him. He didn't look at Angie. His gaze was steady on Lauren. "I came to meet you." Chapter 26. He was trying to keep his distance from Lauren. Angie could tell. He wore his reporter detachment like a suit of armor, as if a few patches of hammered-together metal could protect a man's heart. He sat stiffly upright at the head of the table, shuffling cards. They'd been playing hearts for the last hour, talking almost the whole time, although Angie wouldn't characterize it as conversation. An interrogation was more apt. "And you've applied to colleges?" Conlon asked as he dealt the next hand. He didn't look at Lauren. It was, Angie knew, an old reporter's trick. Don't look. They'll think it's a casual question, one you don't care about. "Yes," Lauren answered, without looking up from her cards. "Where?" "USC, Pepperdine, Santa Clara, Berkeley, UW, UCLA. "Do you still think college is an option?" The reference to the baby made Angie look up sharply from her cards. Lauren's gaze was surprisingly direct. It was clear that she'd decided enough was enough. "I'm going to college." "It'll be hard," he said, pulling out cards to pass. "I don't mean to be rude, Mr. Malone," Lauren said, her voice taking on strength, "but life is always hard. I got a scholarship to Faircrest because I never gave up. I'll get a scholarship to college for the same reason. Whatever I have to do, I'll do."
"Do you have any relatives to help?"
"Angie is helping me."
"What about your own family?"
Lauren answered quietly. "I'm alone." Poor Conlon. Angie watched him melt right there at the head of the table with the cards in his hands. The reporter face gave way, leaving behind the sad, lined face of a man who was worried. Angie could tell he was trying to back away from the emotion he'd stirred up, but he was caught, trapped by the tears in a girl's eyes. He cleared his throat.
"Angie tells me you're interested in journalism." There it was, higher ground.
Lauren nodded. She led with the two of diamonds.
"Yes."
Conlon played the king.
"Maybe you'd like to come to work with me someday. I could introduce you to some of the people there. Let you see how reporters work."
When she looked back on it, Angie saw how everything had changed in that moment. The interrogation vanished, leaving in its place a mini party. For the next hour, they talked and laughed and played cards. Conlon told a series of funny work stories about stupid criminals. Angie and Lauren relayed some of their cookie-making mishaps. At around 10 o'clock, the phone rang. It was David, calling from Aspen. Lauren took the phone upstairs. Conlon turned to Angie. She wasn't sure, but she thought it was the first time he'd dared to look at her.
"Why are you here?" she asked.
"It's Christmas Eve. You're my family."
She wanted to lean forward and kiss him, but she felt awkward, unsure. After all those years of living and loving together, they were separate now.
"Habit isn't enough," she said softly.
"No."
"Is it a start?"
Before he could answer, Lauren bounded back into the room, smiling brightly, looking like a girl with her whole life in front of her.
"He misses me," she said, sliding into her seat and scooting up to the table.
Angie and Conlon immediately went back to playing cards. For the next hour, they all talked about things that didn't matter. It was the best night Angie had had in years. So much so that when Lauren announced that she was going to bed, Angie actually tried to talk her out of it. She didn't want this evening to end.
"Ange," Conlon said, "let the poor girl go to bed. It's late. How can Santa come if she's not asleep?"
Lauren laughed. It was a young, girlish sound, full of hope. It did Angie's heart good to hear it.
"Well, good night," Lauren said, surging toward Angie, hugging her.
"Merry Christmas," she whispered. When she drew back, she added, "This was my best Christmas Eve ever." Then she flashed a smile at Conlon and left the room. Angie sat back in her chair. With Lauren gone, the room felt too quiet.
"How are you going to make it through her pregnancy?"
Conlon asked the question gently, as if the words caused him pain.
"How will you handle watching her belly grow and feeling the baby kick and shopping for onesies?"
"It will hurt."
"Yes."
Her gaze was steady, even if her voice wasn't. "Not being there for her would hurt more."
"We've been through this before."
Angie thought about that. About them. They'd played cards with Sarah Decker, too, and watched television with her, and bought her new clothes. But it had always been the unborn child that connected them.
"No," she finally said. "Not this."
"Hope always came easily to you, Angie. It was part of what ruined us. You don't know how to give up."
"Hope was all I had."
"No, you had me." The truth of it settled heavily on her heart. "Let's not look in the rearview mirror tonight. I love you. Can that be enough for now?"
"For tonight, you mean?"
She nodded. "Alcoholics take one day at a time. Maybe old lovers can do the same." At that, he leaned toward her, put his hand around the back of her neck and pulled her toward him. Their gazes met. Hers was overbright with unshed tears. His was dark with worry. He kissed her. It was everything she needed, that kiss, and more than she'd imagined. The next thing she knew, he had her in his arms and was carrying her up the stairs. He started to go to Angie's old bedroom. She laughed. "The big bedroom. We're the grown-ups now." He pivoted, pushed through the door, and kicked it shut behind him. The next morning when Angie woke up, her whole body ached. She rolled onto her side and snuggled up to Conlon, kissing his stubbled jawline.
"Merry Christmas," she murmured, moving her hand along his naked chest.
He blinked awake.
"Merry Christmas."
For what seemed an eternity, she gazed at him, her nipples pressed against his chest, her body ripe with a longing so sharp and sweet it hurt. She could feel their hearts beating together again. When she kissed him, it was with everything she had, all the good times and the bad and the in-between. It was a kiss that peeled back the hard layer of years and made her feel young again, carefree and hopeful. She touched his cheek in wonder. Perhaps this was how women felt when their men came home from war. Sad somehow, and yet more in love than they'd thought possible.
"Love me," she whispered.
"I tried not to."
"It didn't work," he said, pulling her into his arms.
Much later, when Angie could breathe evenly again and the trembling in her body had stilled, she rolled out of bed and went in search of her robe.
"Will you come to Mama's with us?"
He grinned. "That would certainly start up the old rumor mill."
"Please?
Where else would I be on Christmas morning?" Angie laughed out loud. That was how good she felt. "Get dressed. We're already late." Finding a robe, she slipped into it and went down the hall to Lauren's room. She expected to find the girl dressed and awake, chomping at the bit to open presents. But she was sound asleep.
Angie went to the bed and sat down.
"Wake up, honey," she said, brushing the hair from her eyes.
Lauren blinked awake.
"Morning," she murmured.
"Get up, sleepyhead, it's Christmas."
"Oh, yeah."
Her eyes slid shut again. Angie frowned. What kid didn't jackknife out of bed on Christmas morning? The answer came fast on the question's heels, a kid who wasn't used to much of a Christmas. She couldn't help thinking of the apartment building, of the woman, mother, who'd walked away without a word. She leaned down to kiss Lauren's head. "Come on, sleeping beauty. We have to be at Mama's in 15 minutes. We open presents early in this family." Lauren threw the covers back and ran for the bathroom. They both knew there would be lukewarm water for the second shower and only cold water for the poor third-place loser. Angie returned to her bedroom. She found Conlon dressed in her father's old plaid bathrobe standing by the window. He was holding a small, silver-wrapped box. They'd always had their private Christmas before going to Mama's, but she hadn't expected him this year.
"You got me a present?"
"I didn't..." He came toward her, gave her the box. "It's just a little something." She peeled the foil paper off and opened the white box. Inside lay a beautiful hand-blown Christmas ornament, a silvery angel with crystal highlights and impossibly faceted wings.
"I found it in Russia last month, when I was interviewing Svetlaska."
She stared down at the beautiful angel that fit in the palm of her hand, remembering another Christmas morning so many years ago.
"It's because I'm always thinking of you," he'd said, giving her a small wooden shoe ornament he'd bought in Holland. It had been the start of a collection, a tradition. Finally, she looked up at him.
"You bought this last month?"
"I missed you," he said quietly. She went to the dresser then, pulled open the top drawer and dug through her underwear. When she turned back to Conlon, she was holding a small blue velvet box.
"I have a present for you, too," she said, moving toward him. They both knew what it was. He took it from her, snapped it open. Her wedding ring was inside. The diamond sparkled against the dark velvet. She wondered if he, too, were remembering the day they picked it out. Two kids in love, going from store to store, holding hands, believing in forever with all their hearts.
"You're giving this back to me?" he said.
She smiled. "I figure you'll know what to do with it sooner or later." It's a Wonderful Life, Miracle on 34th Street, A Christmas Story. For most of her life, Lauren had watched those famous holiday movies and dozens of others and thought, "Yeah, right." Perfectly shaped Christmas trees dressed in thousands of lights, wrapped in golden beaded garland, and covered in hand-chosen family heirloom ornaments. Evergreen boughs that draped fireplace mantles and coiled up banisters. It wasn't real, she would have said. It wasn't Christmas the way ordinary children saw it. That was Hollywood. Then she walked through the wreath-decorated Desaria front door and found herself in Wonderland. There were decorations everywhere, on every table and windowsill and picture frame. Tiny glass reindeer and porcelain snowmen and brass sleighs full of brightly colored balls. The tree in the corner of the room was huge and so clustered with ornaments you could barely see the green of branches. A beautiful white star glittered at the top, its tip just touching the ceiling. And the presents! Lauren had never seen so many gifts in one room. She turned to Conlon. "Wow," was all she could say. She couldn't wait to call David tonight and describe it to him. She wouldn't leave out a single detail.
"That was my thought the first time I came for Christmas," Conlon said, smiling. "My dad used to give my mom a toaster for Christmas and not bother to wrap it." Lauren could relate to that kind of holiday. Angie came up beside them. "It's grotesque, I know. Wait till you see us eat. We're like piranha."
She looped an arm around Lauren.
"Come into the kitchen. That's where the real action is."
She grinned at Conlon.
"This should be good."
It took them almost half an hour to move through the living room. Every person, young or old, who saw Conlon screamed, jumped up from their seat, and tackled him. It was like being with a rock star.
Lauren clung to Angie's hand and let herself be guided through the crowd. By the time she reached the kitchen, she was lightheaded. At the doorway, they paused. Maria was at the breakfast table, cutting out cookies from a sheet of green dough. Mira was arranging olives and sliced carrots onto an ornate crystal tray. Livy was pouring a creamy white mixture into a pie shell.
"You're late," Maria said, barely looking up. 3 miles away, and still you're late."
Conlon stepped into the room. "It's my fault, Maria. I kept your girl up late last night." The women all shrieked at once and threw their hands into the air, running toward Conlon for hugs and kisses.
"They all love Con," Angie said to Lauren, stepping aside to let her sisters swarm him.
When they were finally done kissing and hugging and interrogating Conlon and Angie, the women went back to cooking. Lauren learned to cut radishes into roses and make gravy and set a beautiful table. Then the kids started running into the room, pulling on Maria's sleeve, begging to open presents.
"All right," Maria finally said, wiping the flour from her hands. "It is time."
Angie took Lauren's arm and led her into the living room, where people were sitting on every available surface, chairs, sofa, footstools, hearth, floor. The kids swarmed the tree, picking through the gifts, handing them out to the people scattered throughout the room. Lauren excused herself and left the house, quietly closing the door behind her. She hurried out to the car and retrieved the one present she'd brought. Holding it close to her chest, she returned into the warm, cinnamony-scented house and sat down beside Angie on the hearth. Little Danny came up to her, offered her a gift.
"Oh, that's not for me," Lauren said. "Here, let me help you read."
Angie touched her thigh.
"It's for you."
Lauren didn't know what to say. She mumbled, "Thank you," and placed the gift gingerly on her lap. She couldn't help touching it, gliding her fingers across the sleek, foiled paper. Then came another gift for her, and another, from Maria, from Livy, from Mira. Lauren had never had so many presents. She turned to Angie, whispered, "I didn't know. I didn't get gifts for..."
"It's not a competitive sport, honey. My family remembered you when they were shopping, that's all."
Conlon picked his way across the melee of children in the middle of the room and sat down on Lauren's other side. She scooted toward Angie to make room.
"Kinda overwhelming, isn't it?"
Lauren laughed shakily.
"Totally."
"That's all of 'em, Nana,"
one of the kids yelled, and that was all it took. Everyone started opening their gifts. The sound of ripping paper was as loud as a chainsaw. People and children squealed with delight and jumped up to kiss one another. Lauren bent down and picked up a present from her pile. It was from Mira, Vince, and the kids. She was almost afraid to open it. Then the moment would be over. She ripped the paper along the seam and carefully folded it back up for reuse. She looked up quickly to see if anyone was watching her. Thankfully, everyone was busy with their own presents. She lifted the white box top. Inside lay a beautiful, hand-embroidered peasant-style blouse. It would work as maternity wear. The thought of it squeezed her heart. She looked up, across the room, but Mira and Vince were busy with their own gifts. Next, she opened a silver link bracelet from Livy and her family. From Maria, she received a cookbook. Her last gift was a gorgeous, hand-tooled leather journal from Angie. The inscription read, "To my dear Lauren, the newest member of our family. Welcome. Love, Angie." She was staring at the inscription when Angie gasped beside her.
"Oh, my."
Lauren looked to her left. Angie had opened the gift Lauren had brought. It was a plain oak frame, 17 by 20, with ivory matting that had cutouts of different sizes for pictures. Lauren had chosen photographs from the wooden box for most of the openings. A few held color shots she'd taken at Thanksgiving with her disposable camera. Angie's forefinger traced the glass over the picture of her and her father. In it, Angie wore flowered bell-bottoms and a tight V-neck sweater with multicolored horizontal stripes. She was sitting on her father's lap, obviously telling him a story. The photographer had caught him laughing.
"Where did you find these pictures?" Angie said. Suddenly, Lauren was afraid. Had she done something wrong? Gone too far? She'd only wanted to make something special. They're copies. The originals are still in the box. The room seemed to go silent by degrees. One conversation stopped, then another and another. Lauren